My next guest is on the line. He is Ben Freeman. He is an author, he's an educator, as well as a Jewish rights campaigner. Ben, great to have you on Chai FM. I should say, finally.
I know, thank you so much for having me, and I'm sorry it's taken so long, but I'm here now, and that's the main thing.
We've pinned you down, and having that Scottish accent on the other side was worth waiting for because it's got
Thank
me smiling
you.
already. Ben, we're going to pretty much talk about everything it is that you do, but I do want to start at the end with your last book, Jewish in the Jews and Indigenous People. You've written and spoken a lot about Jewish indigeneity. For listeners who may not be familiar with the term, what do we mean when we talk about Jewish indigeneity?
What we are meaning is, I mean, very simply, that we are indigenous to the land of Israel. We are an indigenous people, and as part of that, we then have rights to self-determination as set out by the United Nations. Now, we know that the United Nations isn't really a friend to the Jews, but in this regard, it's quite useful. And the way that I demonstrated that we are indigenous in the book is by exploring the criteria that the United Nations have put together to identify indigenous people. But really, what we're meaning is that there is an emotional relationship between the Jewish people and the land of Israel. It is continuous, it is ongoing, it is central to our identities as Jews, and it is very similar to the indigenous relationships that all indigenous people have to their land, whether it's the Maori or the Aboriginals in Australia, or the various, Native American tribes, or of course in Canada and all over the world, in Africa as well. It's a special, unique relationship which exists between a people and a land. It's not the same as being English or French because it's not just about national identity, it's a relationship with the land itself.
The timing of your book, I mean, it's serendipitous. The concept has just become so much more important in today's world where the absolute opposite accusation is being hurled at us, that of being colonizers and occupiers and the like. What was the genesis of the book? When did you start writing it?
So I started writing it prior to October 7th, which was kind of the extraordinary
It's
thing.
remarkable.
So I started writing and researching, in March 2023. So not long before, but still before. And it came about because in 2021, I published my first book, Jewish Pride, Rebuilding a People. Almost forgot what it was called there. The second book came in 2022, and it was Reclaiming Our Story, The Pursuit of Jewish Pride. And I knew that I wanted to write a trilogy. And I also knew, as an educator, that I wanted to leave the Jewish people in a better position to define our own identities, because that was one of the main tenets of Jewish Pride that I set out in my first book, that we are the only people who get to define our identity. But it's not enough just to reject the non-Jewish definition, right? Because then we might be left with a vacuum. We're left with a blank space. We need to know who we are. So I knew that I needed to write something which would, again, better help the Jewish people be literate in what it means to be a Jew in all that encompasses. So as a civilization, as a culture, with religion, with land, with practice. And I've felt attached to the idea of indigeneity for a while. It certainly was not something I utilized as a child, but even then I felt it, even though I was not aware that I was feeling it. I knew that when my family and I were sitting down to Shabbat dinner in Glasgow, speaking Hebrew and saying the brachot with this accent, that we also belong to another land. So the idea had kind of percolated in my mind for years, and then I saw the conversation online. I was not the first person to discuss this. This is the first book on the topic, but the conversation was kind of percolating, and it's one that I identified with and thought it was important. And yeah, I could never have envisioned how important it would come post October 7th. And it is extraordinary because what we're seeing is not just Israel's Jewishness be erased, right? That's happening all over the world, but that has a direct consequence for the identity of Jewish people. Because if Israel is not the indigenous land of the Jews, then we are, as the world says, or we are, as the world accuses, these colonizers. Whereas the reality is, no, it is our land. And that's not me talking about modern political borders, right? Saying where our state should be, but we are indigenous to that land. We have a relationship with it. It is continuous. It's existed from the entirety of our existence as a people. And it is not the case that we are these white colonizers, as the kind of West would claim it.
Not just white, uber white, which is just the
Yeah,
most
the
remarkable thing in
whitest.
the world, because for 2,000 years we haven't been white enough, and suddenly
Precisely.
in the last 3 years we're uber white.
But this is the
It's
thing that we have to understand, that even that in itself is a continuation of classic Jewish tropes. If we kind of split apart and break apart the idea that Jews have often been, not always, but often been accused of being wealthy, of being obsessed with money, of controlling finances, of being privileged, right? To use a modern word, privileged. What does it mean in 2025 when someone in the West talks about whiteness? They're talking about power, they're talking about privilege. So actually, it's completely no surprise that we're now associated with that in certain parts of the political spectrum. On other parts, as you kind of rightly say, we're still not considered white. And again, that's why we have to define our identities. We have to think about, okay, how are we identifying on the census? We have to know our story because we cannot move through the world with confidence and pride if we're having our identity or experience defined by the other, by the outsider.
But the timing of your message is nothing short of miraculous. I actually can't believe you arrived at this point when you did. Just makes me wonder about you. I mean, did you grow up in a very Zionist house? Were you, I don't know if you've got an Israeli parent in the background.
No.
How did you get to this point?
So I will say that both of my siblings have made Aliyah, and I'm going to Israel on Sunday for work, and I will see them. And my mum was born in Northern Ireland, my dad was born in Scotland. But as you said, we were born in an uber Zionist, I really uber Zionist. And Glasgow then, I think it is still, maybe slightly less, but then was also uber Zionist. And Jewish identity was really all, or at least mostly, connected to Israel. I knew that growing up in Glasgow, I was a minority. But this is the kind of fascinating thing, and I guess what the modern political culture war, how it informs us, because when I knew that I was a minority as a kid, it wasn't good or bad. It just was, right? Like we knew that we were Jews, there was the Pakistani Glasgow kids, there was the Nigerian, there was the Indian, there was the white kids. We knew that we were different, and it wasn't good or bad, it just was. But when I came home, we had the JNF bulletin, we had pictures of rabbis and Israel on the walls. We spoke a different language in prayer. It was all. He left home when I was, I think, 16 or 15 and went to join the IDF. He was in the Israeli army for a decade. And my sister shortly followed. So we were very, very focused on Israel. But for me, it's just, without sounding too prescriptive, it's just truth from Jewish identity. It is at the center of Jewish identity, and it is inauthentic and false to say otherwise. And yes, I lived that as a child, as a young person, but it was through my work that those ideas solidified. Like, no, you can't. It's impossible to separate Israel. And it's Medinat and Eretz, right? State and the land. It's why Ethiopian Jews, when they were arriving in Israel in the 80s and 90s, the ground, that is something that's been done for years. And again, referring back to my kind of, when you asked about indigeneity, it's the land. We have a special emotional relationship with the land. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I will say I'm just a Jew. I'm just a Jew feeling kind of authentic, rich Jewish identity.
What misconceptions are you encountering when you're discussing this issue of indigeneity, specifically in the context of the UK, which seems to have just changed 180 degrees in the past couple of years? Ben, are you with me?
Has changed dramatically. Yeah, I'm with you.
Sorry, I don't know why our line is, it's coming and going. Let's give it another
Can you
go.
hear
If not,
me?
we'll get back to you and try again. But over to you.
Okay, so yes, the UK has changed beyond recognition in a very short space of time. But the thing that I've encountered most actually is misconceptions about what it means to be indigenous, not necessarily Jewishness, but there is a perception that to be indigenous generally means three things to people. It's the kind of image that's conjured in their mind. One, it's to be in a land first, so firstness. Two, it's to be oppressed. and three, it's to be positive. And Jewish writers or Jewish rabbis and thinkers have themselves said, oh, Jews are not indigenous because we cannot appropriate the indigenous struggle. And that's really a ludicrous notion, because why is the indigenous experience inherently a struggle? Of course, we know that it is in many ways, the Jewish experience also, by the way, but there's something kind of problematic about saying, well, to be indigenous is to be inherently oppressed. And that is also part of the UN's definition, which we can get to maybe a bit later, but is also a little problematic. But it's to say to people, no, indigenous people can be modern, their kind of ancient heritage and connection, or they can have sovereignty like we have. Why are we saying that, well, an indigenous group of people are no longer indigenous if they're sovereign in their land? So that's been the biggest misconception, really breaking down misunderstanding of the term itself. Because when I would tell people, Jews and non-Jews, about the book that I was writing, they'd say, oh, can you tell me more about that? And I'd say, yes, da 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 da. And they would say, oh, yeah, well, obviously you're indigenous. It's very clear once you've broken down those initial barriers.
I think you're a very brave man. I think you're taking a very unpopular view. I mean, I'm with you 100%, but then again, I would be. How are the younger generation of Jews in the UK responding to your message? Craig, it looks like we've lost connection. Maybe I'm going to ask you to reconnect with Ben while you disconnect and reconnect, because that line was absolutely awful. I'm going to go to the WhatsApp line and read some of your WhatsApps until Craig indicates to me that Ben is back and that we are good. Karen says, such an interesting afternoon. Scottish is good too. Well, that's nice of you. Listen, he's got a great accent, doesn't he? I remember, I don't know if you do recall, I spoke to him about 4.5 years ago. He's just written one of his books, and I'm not sure if he recalls it, but I definitely recall talking to him, and this is our second go. Have I got you back with me, Ben?
You have. Don't know what happened there,
Okay,
but I'm
that's
back.
great. Here's hoping that our connection survives the transatlantic distance. I was asking you about, firstly, I said to you, I think you're taking a very brave stand, and I applaud you for that. I'm also wondering to what extent the younger generation, the youngsters, and I'm talking about the young Jews in the UK, how receptive are they to your message?
People are receptive, and that's the extraordinary thing. I think that Jews are longing to have a deeper, richer understanding of our identities. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, my work has always been multi-generational, but I'm seeing that today. It's older people, it's middle-aged people, it's people in their 20s and teenagers coming to this idea. And often it's because, you know, they're looking at the world, they're seeing how the Jews and Israel has been treated since October 7th. And there is something inside them, and this is the extraordinary thing about being Jewish, that there's like a little flame inside them, inside us, which is alive, and they can feel that, and they can also, I think, feel the pressure to have it extinguished. And there's something inside them which says, no, I'm not going to tolerate this. And they're
I'm
looking for.
surprised. I'm surprised because I'm just listening to you saying this. I want to believe what you say is true. I just think 37% of young Jews in New York City voted for Zoran Mamdani. I mean, there's
Yes,
a
no, listen,
disconnect here.
it's true. I mean, that is true. That's absolutely happening. And our community needs to address this. And we need to understand the threats that we're facing from the outside, not just Jew hatred externally, but how it infiltrates us. You know, my second book was about internalized anti-Jewishness. So while there are absolutely the people that I'm describing, you see them on social media, we see them at the rallies, on the marches. But yes, you're absolutely right. There is a growing percentage of young people, young Jews, who are positioning themselves against Israel. And it's an enormous problem, and our community needs to fight back. And we have to do that in a number of ways, but we have to first of all recognize that there's a problem, and we're not good at that. We're not good at dissecting our identities. But yeah, no, it's real. That issue that you're talking about is real, and it's harmful, and it has the potential to pose very serious problems for the future of the Jewish people if we don't get a handle on it.
Agree with you 100%. So I'm just looking at the time. I've probably got about 3, 4 minutes with you remaining this afternoon. If you could give one message to British Jews about embracing their identity, what would that message be?
Is first of all, we have to go on journeys. We have to go on journeys of exploration, of introspection, to really analyze and understand our own relationship with our Jewishness. And that's work, and it's not that sexy, and it takes time, but it's vitally important, and it's the work that other minorities have to do. So when we do that work, the first thing I would say is engage without shame and with empathy. When we're dissecting our identities, we have to ask difficult questions and uncomfortable questions, and we may not always like the answers, but we have to understand that we individually have done nothing wrong. We are a tiny minority navigating a much bigger and very hostile world. So we're doing our best, number one. The second is to, I'm going to use language here that some people may not like, but it's to mentally decolonize. We need to understand, especially in the diaspora, but also in Israel, that we're a product of the worlds that we live in. And some of them are wonderful and great, but not all of the values that we are born into in those diasporic societies fit or respect our Jewishness. So we have to kind of unlearn some of the ideas that we may previously have held. An example is, and I always say this is the hill I'm going to die on,
Been.
we're not a faith. We're a people who have religion. Faith is a Christian concept or a Muslim concept. It is not a Jewish concept. Yes, we have emunah, but emunah is a ancient Hebrew concept. How can we translate that nicely and neatly to faith? So the work of interfaith, for example, these are small things, but things like that should be, interheritage, not interfaith. We need to know our own story. And that takes me to the last point. We need to go back to school. We need to understand what it means to be Jewish from a Jewish perspective. And listen, there'll be a range of views that we're Jews. We like to argue. We like to have a bit of a debate. But we should be arguing ourselves. We shouldn't be being told what it means to be Jewish from the outside world. So to recap, we have to, without shame, with empathy, mental decolonization, understanding the Jewish story from a Jewish perspective. And then the last point is be Jewish, be actively Jewish. The Jewish people have always been a people defined by our action, whether it's Shabbat or Yom Kippur or circumcision or our food, our music, our laws. There's so much part of our, as which is part of our civilization, which will relate to you as individuals, find something and do it. We have to be active Jews. That's how we carry on this incredible civilization we're all a part of.
Ben, in the final minute, we have lots of allies. Our listenership is probably 50% not Jewish. So, your message for our non-Jewish listeners, what is the most important takeaway about Jewish indigeneity?
Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you for your allyship. It's wonderful. The most important thing is to understand Jewish identity through a Jewish perspective, even as an ally, right? When I'm an ally to other communities, it's not my job to speak over them or to talk over them or to impose my views onto them. It's about listening, it's about understanding us through our perspective, and then using that knowledge to speak to your non-Jewish friends. My former partner was South African and he wasn't Jewish, and he would have amazing conversations with his non-Jewish friends through about things that we've discussed together, and they were fruitful and rich and probably more productive than conversations I could have. So take the information, take the idea of indigeneity, investigate it, and kind of go forth and multiply, right? Go forth and speak to your non-Jewish friends. But with regards to your relationship with the Jewish community, listen and ask questions. It's absolutely okay if you don't necessarily understand something immediately. This is not your experience if you're an ally, just as I would have to ask questions to another community. Don't feel that you're not invited to ask questions and to learn. We love that. And again, thank you, because I would maybe disagree. There's not that many allies. Maybe in South Africa we have a lot. I think globally there's not that many. So the ones we do have, we really appreciate and value. So to everyone listening who is not Jewish, thank you. Thank you for supporting this channel and for supporting us as a global people.
We're going to leave it there, Ben. That's not the last time we chat. I just had a squiz at the SMS line. You've gone down very well this afternoon.
Okay,
Thank you
good
for
to hear
that.
that.
We'll catch you back.
Of
Cheers and
course.
thank you.